funny because I was just down in Cork for the Short Story Festival that's going on Poland for 5 days. And I randomly met Paul at it. I didn't realise that this night was going on. So when I met Paul, I said, oh, Ovale is going on. You have to come down to it. So I hadn't really rehearsed anything. So I'm probably going to just do a poem for you that I can remember from memory. That's the only place where I remember something from memory. I have to make two apologies. Number one, I'm not going to read for 24 hours, like the last speaker. And number two, I don't have a cute northern accent to let me get away with certain, you know, deafness of language.
Thank you, Lisa.
But so the poem I'm going to do is called, has anyone ever had that experience, you know, when you're really hungover? And okay, I wrote this last summer. I was meeting a friend. I live in Galway, in Salt Hill, for kind of brunch, breakfast, whatever, hungover stuff. Anyway,
that's the poem.
And there was nothing to read. You know when you're bored and there's nothing to read. And the only thing to read was the Sunday Independent, a paper that I fucking detest. And my friend went to the toilet and I just got so angry flicking through it. I was like, oh my god, do people actually read this shit? Anyway, this is my rant on. It's called Lines Written Upon Leaping Through the Sunday Independent, Salt Hill, August 2011. Apparently, Ronan O'Gara likes a good moisturizer after the holidays. This reminds me of those women who lay down their lives for 2-for-1 Marks and Sparks dinners and marvel at the fit of their spandex knickers. This is stunning in its inanity, and I know that is an oxymoron, like silence being deafening and things that shine darkly. I'm not trying to be irritating, but I literally have no idea of how to use the word literally sparingly, or indeed how to be literal as someone who is always so. This is a game of two halves, the first being two syllables long, and that's the long and the short of it. And on page 30, Rosanna Davison is Barbie frozen with her father. And I suppose, like father, like daughter could be one. Or, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, and empty vessels make most noise. I have never seen a dress you're wearing with the highlights in your hair that comes to noise. If only I could turn the other cheek when women of a certain persuasion insist on referring to sanitary towels as STs. Or give off a general air of how things might have been. But I suppose that would make me a martyr to the cause, and none of it's really over till the fat lady sings. I'm running out of steam trying to make sense of this, and I've had it up to here with zealous celebrities, and this is a fist shoved into a shout, and I will cross the barren foot drops to your mouth and call and recall totally the birth of the language of doubt.
Thanks, Lisa. 30th of November, All Ireland Slam Championships, round the corner, Cypress Avenue. It's
Lisa
Friday
has a
night.
Website as well. Lisa
Lisa's
Allen,
gonna
Donnelly.
Be there. And of course, the website.
I do have a website. It's
LisaAllen.me.
LisaAllen.me.
Dot me.
If you want to check out some of my poetry and articles and fairy tales, I write fairy tales.
LisaAllen.me.
That's it. I am a complete idiot. Nobody else exists.
We'll see you in November anyway. Definitely. Looking forward to that. It's going to be a great night. Next up, we have Rab or Cart.
Yeah! Yeah.
If you know the point of balance, you can settle the details. If you can settle the details, you can stop running around. Once you stop running around, your mind will become calm. When your mind becomes calm, you can think in front of a tiger. When you can think in front of a tiger, you will surely succeed. That was a yellow, that was Mencius, who inherited the kind of the mantle of Confucianism in about the 3rd century BCE in China. This is another cover. This is by Robert Burns, Scotland's national poet. My father was a farmer. My father was a farmer from up on the hill. My father was a farmer from up on the Carrick border, and carefully he raised me in dignity and order. He bade me act a manly path, though I never had a father, for without an honest, manly heart, no man was worth regarding. So out into the world my course I did determine, though to be rich was not my pitch, to be great was charming. My talents, they were not the worst, nor yet my education. Resolved was I, at least, to try to mend my situation. Through many a wee and vain essay, I courted fortune's favour, some cause unseen still step between to frustrate each endeavour. Sometimes by foes I was overpowered, sometimes by friends forsaken. And when my hope was at the top, I still was worst mistaken. And then sore harassed and tired at last with fortune's vain delusion, I dropped my schemes like idle dreams, and I came to this conclusion. The past is dead, the future's hid, it's good or ill untried, but the present hour is in my power, and so I will enjoy it.
All right.
God, we got some poets. Okay, we've got Trevor Goring in the house.
Woo!
Right. I'm certainly no poet, and so it's a cover number for me for sure. Just a love of words, like all of you, and probably a poem that many of you know well. So an old favourite in a way. The road less traveled.
Oh, okay.
Two roads diverged in a yellow wood, and sorry I could not travel both and be one traveller. Long I stood and looked down one as far as I could to where it bent in the undergrowth. Then took the other as just as fair, and having perhaps the better claim because it was grassy and wanted wear, though as to that the passing there had worn them just about the same. And both that morning equally lay in leaves, no step or trodden black. Oh, I left the first for another day, but knowing how way leads on to way, doubted that I would ever come back. I will be telling this somewhere with a sigh, ages and ages hence. Two roads diverged in a wood, and I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all the difference.
Thank you, Trevor. For bringing Frost back to us. We love Robert, don't we? Okay. Next up, we have a regular at the open mic at Edoville, Seamus Arendt.
All right.
Thanks, Paul. Where do you follow that? The Cook's Northwest Passage. Cotton plateau, then peaks and slopes, puffed and fluffed on ephemeral plains, deserted. Icarus I view, ice caps burnished, tawny, fractured, and crusty. How long more can this last? The midnight blade hacks into a ledge to find purchase under the overhang. An avalanche of immense whiteness starts to crumble, then tumble in sweet silence, slipping down the sheer face past stalactites, will-o'-the-wisps of froth, down frosted floes, to land across the mouth of the fjord, the wedge shape of attrition, eating into those honeycombed caverns, those canyons, pale as egg white, down into blue, glazed flats of Wedgwood. Ah, baked Alaska.
Didn't someone say no food poems at the 12 o'clock? Right. Next we have another Belfast voice, I do believe, Finn O'Gorman. Finn O'Gorman here? Is she here?
She is.
I didn't see her.
Granny O'Gorman. Oh, Granny, do you mind the tram rides down the falls to the Smithfield Market for fish, potted herring for tea, stopping at Auntie Teresa's, Regine and me kissing Uncle Dinny because he was old and rich and might leave us money, and walking home up Norfolk Parade, and the smell of the yellow privet hedges. Do you remember, Granny? In photographs now, her face is stoic, even grim. But in my mind, it's a softly blurred constant, regularly tremored with rasping as she hacked the fluid out of her lungs and disgorged it into a hanky. Do you mind how someone always stopped us? Anne Maud, them's the grandchildren. Thon one's the spit of Princess Anne. And how insulted we'd all be. And so you'd buy us penny ice lollies from Coors shop on the Glen Road. Do you remember, Granny? For many years, I didn't know she was considered odd by neighbours who said it was grief tipped her when a daughter, Finola, my namesake, died of pneumonia at the age of 7. After she took to haunting every death in cold Belfast parlours, waking each corpse as though she'd borne it. Another theory, espoused by the men and extrapolated to all females of the O'Gorman clan, had her stricken early with a deadly menopause from which there was no recovery. Do you remember, Granny, the fat green gooseberries, the red currants and the black currants you grew in the wilderness by the loaning, and how we'd spent hours picking them, making jams for the winter, and tomatoes sweeter than sweets that Grandy grew in his greenhouse, and the pretty peas I loved to shell until the 2-inch earwig skittered out one day. Do you remember, Granny? I can't remember that she ever laughed or smiled or ever shouted at me. She kept her harshness for her layabout sons. I never heard her speak to Grandy, and I never heard Grandy speak to her, connected as they were by the rhythms and rituals of a working class household. And I was connected in the constancy of her rhythms as she wheezed and shuffled about her kitchen, and in the knowledge that I was integral to the femaleness of domestic chores, as I stood on a chair to help Granny sift flour and dilute the butter with margarine to stretch the limits of post-war rations. Granny, do you remember how you'd make me stand below Conn's windows on weekend mornings and sing Lazy Bones as lustily as 5-year-old lungs allowed? And then you'd hide me when he came roaring down the stairs in his drunk, dragged distemper. Do you remember, Granny? She didn't hold with doctors, not with soap or water either. The contented hours and the waft of her granny smell gave me my lifelong affinity for odoriferous old biddies. Granny, can I bring the bucket to Mrs. Park's Chucky's? No, not Reggie, me. When she finally sickened enough to be compelled into the Mater Hospital, where Reggie, now nurse, could tend to her. My mother Mary and her youngest sister Deirdre descended like Valkyries upon the hovel of their youth. With middle class martyrdom and covert glee, they scoured and sterilized house and souls. Out went the markers of a hoarder's life. In came modern self-sufficiency, washing machine, vacuum. Lear never had such daughters. Her life and body disinfected, sanitized, Granny O'Gorman remained in exile in the Mater until she died. you remember the time I jumped on Aidan Poland in the Falls Park and kissed him with great abandon and then told his mother what a great kisser he was? And she told you, and you told me, that youngsters who kissed at 5 years of age would grow up with thick lips. And Cormac, who did the same with Sheila Poland, grew up with thick lips. And I with thin. Do you remember, Granny? She lived long enough to see the only Protestant family burned out of Norfolk Parade, and long enough to see one layabout son arise to nationalist leadership. But she died before the fully bloomed Troubles decimated her beloved Belfast, and ordinary Troubles and emigration enfeebled the O'Gorman clan. And now, in my own middle years and in my own exile, I wonder, was she ever young and carefree? Do you mind the day Aidan offered sixpence to whoever could guess the last name of his maraid? And I said, for I was smart, and because I'd heard him say it, "Maraid darling." And nobody laughed. And I cried. And I didn't get the sixpence. Do you remember, Granny? Dedicated to all would-be poets. It's called Apoplectic. Poem got pummeled last night, posing prettily as art. Pounced on by poet police, paraded before perspicacity, bruised, parsed, picked apart. Even punctuation was picked at. Plucked bare, pronounced pitiful. Poo-pooed by peerers, impatient with pupil stakes. Poor poem, puling pathetically, plunged into pits. Provoking pyrolysis. Providing epiphany. Puck, the lot of them.
Next up we have Jericho Sullivan, our reigning five-year champion.
I wrote a poem back in 93. It pops into my head from time to time, but I've never shared it with anyone, but it just gives you a perspective of how fragile life is. So I call it The Bird.
The Bird.
Covered beneath the ongrowing vines, camouflaged unknown to human minds, peering through the broken hedges, making its home on old house ledges. They seek to find no greed, no lust, their home, their life returned to dust. For humanity's greed will not succeed. Our friend the bird someday will succeed.
Thank you, Derek. And next up we have Sue Cosgrave.
Hi guys, I don't have anything of my own here tonight, but Paul asked me to read something. So this is the five-word anthology that is produced every year, a collection of the five-word challenge poems. So I'll read something from here, and it's this poem I selected is by Jennifer Matthews, who's not here with us tonight. And it's called Old Dong, and the words on the day were tortoiseshell, apple, match, heaven, and insidious. She always aspired to a life decades older. She chose tortoiseshell frames for glasses, read only classics. She looked at gymnastics, at cheerleading, and dances as pastimes, too insidious for her excellent taste at an overripe 16. Aiming for aging, heaving her voracious youth into the dumpster in exchange for something safer, something quieter. She never gave in to the apple in any boy's eye, beyond the secret recording of their names in liquid procession, in endless notebooks of litanies of opportunities contained and discarded. Her notebooks drying out became tinder, lined on bookshelves, over drawers and drawers filled with matches. Thank you.
She's a fabulous poet, Jennifer Matthews. She's a regular at Avail to come on and listen to Jennifer Matthews tonight. She's great. Next up we have Kieran, another fabulous poet, MacArthur. You're all fabulous poets.
Hey guys, I've been away a little while, so just wanted to say that it's wonderful to be back and to hear your words. Beautiful. And this is a song called All for Nothing. Numb the pain and the joy of every impassioned girl and boy until their guilt feels just like their innocence used to, and walk and talk until walking and talking feel just like standing in silence. Maybe we have a certain responsibility not to park our cars on accepted avenues. What's new about the feeling that absolutely nothing has changed except the day, the time, and week, and the happiness that you seek that is still out of reach? So you talk with a softer speech. Your joy each day is dressed up in a different way, in compromise and sway, moving from gray to gray. So you go down to your local Walmart and you ask, can I have it all for nothing? Because you want it all for nothing. Now don't I seem smart? Because I got much more than I need for cheaper than ordinary greed. And feed the excess to your kids until the fat rolls around their hips. Tell them about the running regime that you found in a mail order magazine. Mommy, why don't I look like this? Come here, give mommy a kiss. Would you like to come to the store? I think that it's about time we've had more, and your conscience was at ease until the drive-thru began to tease. Sure, honey, we can stop, it's fine. They're only $1.99. And the girl gives you back your change. But the feeling is a little strange. Maybe we could have bought real food. Maybe she could go to school. But oh no, that can't be right, because the sign's so big and so bright, say you can have it all for nothing, because you want it all for nothing. and what would she learn in school? But how to use that pain-numbing tool that makes her guilt feel just like her innocence used to. So she'd run just as fast as she can to remain as still as she stands. She says, isn't progress strange? This place just looks the same. So she put her pride and her heart in a bringing the end closer to the start. The bringing the end closer to the start. The world gets smaller each week. She talks with a softer speech because her ideas have been bleached by the grade that they've been taught to teach. And the day of happiness that she sees is when she gets that feeling that absolutely nothing has changed. The soft comfort that remains. She says, baby, isn't progress strange? It seems too hard to do. But right there, right on cue, coming slowly out of the blue, a sign shining just for you. Oh, so big and so bright, says you can have it all tonight. You can have it all for nothing, because you want it all for nothing.
Nothing's free. Nothing is free. I feel pretty free. I think I'm free. I'm pretty free. But I'm not totally free. No, I'm totally free. We've got four more people on the open mic, and then we have the purple mouth to close the night. So next up, please, Patricia Walsh.
Yeah!
Thank you, Paul. These are two love poems, or attempted love poems. It's called Madrigal. I hesitate to call it love when I first wheeled my eyes on you. You were there, sitting on the steps, and whatever you were doing pulled me further near them. Summoning the desire I had, long washed ashore, and sad and sad and muddy, arising from the blankets of a perfect life. Whatever you were doing, it pulled and gathered me into an out of a secret distress. If we were meant to be together, wouldn't it have happened by now? Not yet, I only met you once, and now I don't even know what you look like. But there was a chemistry that arose beyond wishful thinking and set the scene, I believe, for definitive times ahead, slowly occurring as they may be. But to think of it another way, I got another glance of your heart, snowy and insincere, something not to take a chance with. You lied about Catholic Civ. You're not even doing the subject. For a moment, I will forgive you. I was chilling sight. It's called indiscretion. Kiss me while the day still is. Now we surely follow and then we won't know what to do with ourselves. Kiss me while it feels slightly awkward enough to make it carry through. Now we surely follow and then the dark will thunder through with faith and reason, enough to make us break ranks to our senses. Kiss me while there is light outside. I need to walk home when the sodium lights don't offer quite the same protection. Now I will surely follow and then. I will be left with more than a thought of you. And when I arrive, my heart will be full, to shining through the small hours, as it does in Norway, for I can never contain the consequence you have for me.
Love Lovely stuff. Patricia, thank you. And next we have, I think, we do? Yes, we do. Africa Convention.
Yeah!
I really admire performance poets. I've never actually learned a poem by heart, I'm ashamed to say. But, you know, some will kind of sink in, and Paul just asked me to read a poem, and I thought, God, I know it by heart. But, you know, I think I might suck it up. I don't know. It's a bit of lash. Can you hear me?
Yeah, lash it up.
Do not lie to a lover. Do not lie to a lover. But on the other hand, do not always tell him the whole truth. Sometimes your secrets will feel like a fire beneath your skin, silently burning. But they should be revealed only when required, like a cat's eye necklace on a dark road. Disclosure exposes, creates a stalking fear, like that of the grasshopper who sang all summer and now faces winter without provision, as the wind whoops and fears and sleet skitters over the quiet. The woodman groaned. Thank you.
Tardanagat Ulveo, the quilt, and ish. It's great. Good to be up there, you know, let the poetry just flow through you. It's wonderful. Good life. Come on, you're all poets. You know it.
Come on, Paul.
We've got two poets left this evening. Oh, do we have another one?
Yes.
Who do we have?
Declan.
Declan. Yes. You're very welcome, Declan. You come up and say a poem for us?
Yes,
yeah, that. Come on. Yeah, we have a poem here, come on. We've got a huge lobbyist, lobby group here. Yeah. Let's welcome Declan to the stage, please.
It's not original. It's just a cover. The last time I actually stood and recited poetry was about 45 years ago, in front of a class of 15-year-olds. We didn't really take it that seriously. And I remember it was W.B. Yeats, so definitely not original. When you're old and grey
and hairless
and full of sleep and dozing by the fire, take down this book and slowly read and dream the soft look your eyes had once and of their sorrows deep. How many loved your moments of that grace and loved your beauty with love false or true, but one man loved the pilgrim soul in you and loved the shadows of your changing face. And bending down beside the glowing bars, murmur, a little sadly, how love fled and paced amongst the mountains overhead and hid his face amid a crowd of stars.
Thank you, Declan. I actually wonder what WB would think of open mics like this nowadays. Huh? Yeah, it'd be great to hear what you have to say about it.
Absolutely.
Someone has to write a poem about that. Two great poets on the way. From Kerry. Will be on Galway. I won't tell you anymore. I'll be in trouble. Albie Garvey.
Yeah.
Nobody told me I'd have to follow you.
scenario. I have a little poem, very short poem, about a shouting language of emotion that exists in the Basque Country. So it's a shouting language, and it's called Irinsina. The catch is that the poem is in Irish. And the poem is about, it's a wish really, that we would be more like the Basques, and that we would shout it out, and we'd get it all out there, and we'd be happy, and hoarse, and full of love. Oh, the menish der war nosne a vastacha, ek skwile legach racht gehard, ek ligint legach gov, gach gov, gach gwi, gach gordes istro, geir, glorver, goidach. The mish sauce is gragach.
Wake up!
Tommy Gahalahaster. Jeremy the Maggot.
You.
Mr. Billy Randall.
I'd like to continue with the Robert Frost theme and do a cover. Fire and Ice by Robert Frost. Some say the world will end in fire. Some say in ice. From what I've tasted of desire, I hold with those that favor fire. But if it hath to perish twice, I think I know enough of hate to say that for destruction ice is also great and will suffice.
We should have more covers. We've got a great cover night actually at our anniversary every year. You can only read other people's poems. It's a great night, right? Can't read your own stuff, yeah? Anyway, it's a delightful aftertaste, this river of kingly colour, an ocular delight, this stream of pure poesy, a vein, aortic mix of spirit liquid, as even evolved vampires overdose on blends of rich, thick contradiction of unraveled breaths expired. And even as muses, pilgrim seasoned muses, each leave a trail of purple dripping from tongue and teeth, a new harvest of mystery. And as even poets starved, sip the mountain manna wine, dream drunk poets, pulse deafened, descend purply their seasoned lips. It's been a fucking great night.
I know I have 24 hours, but Sylvia Plath makes me hot. Ariel, stasis and darkness in the substanceless blue, pour of tor and distances, God's lioness, how one we grow, pivot of heels and knees, the furrow splits and passes, sister to the brown arc of the neck I cannot catch. Nigger eye berries cast dark hooks, black sweet blood mouthfuls. Something else hauls me through air, thighs, hair, flakes from my heels, white godiva, I unpeel, dead hands, dead stringencies, and now I foam to wheat. A glitter of seas, the child's cry melts in the wall, and I am the arrow, the dew that flies at one with the drive, suicidal into the red eye, the cauldron of morning. Thank you.
Thank you. You know what? We're getting one for the road. One for the road. Let it never be said, right? Margaret Kerr.
This is an Irish one. We all know the panic of a morning going out to school when everybody loses everything and can't find what they're looking for. Child loses her school bag. Kawilma bala skula. Er vaka tusta e. Oh, when it is so good to find me, come and share straight. Near she is the kishtan, nigh sticks the shomer sea. Near hug me hoos and spare a e, nor a quig me fain a lee. And mommy. Fecum the ball of skulla, is near imig share straight. Here at the grimitashe, agus to fain a crown e.
And for those of you who need a Google translation, what's the website? Hey, it's been a great night. We're here every Monday. Don't forget us. Let people know about us. Great night, really. Guest host every week. Thank you, Seamus Fox.
Thank you.
And thank you all for coming.
Thank you.